CITR presents DJing 101.9. We offer people a way to learn about the fun of mixing, sharing music, and throwing events. Our workshops and studio access is free for students and members. No experience or turntables are necessary. Workshops from 4 to 8 p.m. are on Tuesdays in 212A in the Student Union Building at UBC. For more information, visit us at citr.ca or follow at CITRDJ on Twitter.
And welcome to us here at CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Brian McDonald. I am your host. This is Skald's Hall, and it is actually a nice day in Vancouver. It is nice and warm. I didn't have to wear my very bulky jacket. Yay! And there was great rejoicing. Yay! Anyway, today is Valentine's Day. And in the tradition of Valentine's Day, I am going to scare you. Because people don't make a lot of lovey-dovey radio dramas, apparently. I went and I checked, and I went to try to find something that was Valentine's Day related. I found Christmas stuff, I found New Year's stuff, Halloween stuff, obviously. But when it came to Valentine's Day, not so much. So we're going to be taking a listen to a couple of classic episodes of the now public domain radio drama Inner Sanctum. But first, just a heads up. Coming up in a couple of weeks, we are going to be having our fun drive here at CITR 101.9 FM. It's going to be a hoot. It's going to be a lot of interesting, unique programming, including a self-produced radio drama for this particular program. So we're going to have some in-house created material, which is been a long time in the making. I did a lot of stuff like that originally, but I try to fill out the program with stuff that's not just me. But for this one, it's going to be a special occasion. We're going to be listening to variety hour type of stuff, and we're going to have some other people on the show. It's going to be great. And I'll be giving away prizes. If you are interested in the spoken word and would like some interesting spoken word prizes, you might want to take a listen to Skald's Hall on the last Friday, February 28th of this month, 2 weeks from now. I'll have some prizes to give away for people who donate sufficiently. If you make a substantial donation, there will be prizes. There will be spoken word prizes. Really cool stuff. And I'll tell you what they are next week. You're just going to have to sit and simmer in titillation until then. Yay! Anyway, let's scare ourselves silly with some episodes of Inner Sanctum. I love Inner Sanctum. This is a really good show. And I'm sure you will too, because I've played it before on this show. And here we go.
Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends of the creaking door. This is your host to welcome you into the inner sanctum once again. Come in. You know, so many people have asked me to explain the significance of the creaking door, but I don't really have to. You see, the door creaks for itself. I was going to have a friend of mine here tonight to give you a short explanation. Being an undertaker by profession, he's an authority on the subject, but he couldn't make it. He's been so busy. Poor chap. He's literally buried in his work. All right, friend. Let's get dreadful. Now, remember, don't scream back at the radio. It won't do you any good. All set? Then listen as we hear our star, Anne Seymour, in the role of Catherine Bryan, tell us this story in her own words.
Flash of light, like a giant white electric light, lit up the sky that night as I went up the walk. And Bryan Mansion looked like a huge gabled tomb standing there on the hill. For a moment, I wanted to run. But much as I hated it, I had come back. Not because I lived there. Not because I wanted to be there. But because in this house, I should find out if I was going to live. or if I was going to die. I let myself in quietly, made my way to the living room. There was a rustling of skirts, and Mother suddenly appeared in the dim, shadowy light.
Kathy, Kathy, dear.
Hello, Mother.
Oh, you're so late, I was getting worried.
Was my stepfather worried, too?
Why, yes, dear. Mark is still up. Here, you've got to take your coat off. It's soaked through.
Don't you touch me.
Kathy, darling.
And don't start sniveling over me again, Mother. I can't stand it.
I was just trying to help you.
Always trying to help me. Why didn't you think of helping me before you married that man upstairs? But no. You're such a pretty woman, Mother. You couldn't possibly be without a husband. What would people say?
Catherine, please, you can't go on like this.
No, I can't. I can't go on very much longer without destroying myself.
You must not say such things.
And why not? It would make you and Mark very happy if I should die. Wouldn't it?
Catherine.
No one in this house wants me to go on living.
Good evening, Catherine.
Mark. I didn't know you were here.
I'm aware of that. I heard you.
Mark, she didn't mean it. She didn't mean a word of it.
Oh, but I did. Now that you're both here, there's something I must find out tonight. It's very important.
What is it?
10 years ago, my father died.
Catherine, we can't discuss that now.
We must. I've got to know certain things.
Why?
Because if I don't, something quite dreadful might happen to me.
Now, Catherine, you're exaggerating.
Dr. Wells doesn't think so. I've been going to him for months now. He knows there's grave danger that I'll go completely out of my mind if I don't find out about this.
My poor darling.
Don't pity me, Mother. Help me. Tell me how my father died. You know you were there.
But, Catherine, there's nothing to tell. Your father was killed in an accident. He was a doctor.
That will be enough, Laura.
Mark.
We'll call Dr. Wells the first thing in the morning and discuss the matter with him.
Why don't you let her tell me? What have you got to hide?
We are not going to discuss this until I speak to Dr. Wells. Now, Laura, I suggest you come upstairs as soon as possible. Good night, Catherine.
Mother, he's gone. You were going to tell me. Where was this accident? How did it happen? Who was involved?
Kathy, you're in no state to hear anything right now. Mark was right. We should speak to Dr. Wells about it first.
Yes, speak to him so you both can make up an appropriate lie to tell me. I don't want any lies. I want the truth, Mother. And I'm prepared to go to any length to get it. Look at this.
Now, Catherine.
Look at it, I tell you. Look at it.
What? What is it?
A woman sold it to me. Today. A strange little woman.
It's a sort of tiny, painted tile.
Not just an ordinary tile, Mother. It comes from the Orient, the woman said. Do you see this very odd design? If you look at it long enough, she said, a strange thing will happen. You'll find yourself able to talk with the dead. See them wherever they are. Touch them. Catherine, I'm going to talk to my father.
You can't be serious.
You won't tell me what I want to know. Then maybe the dead will. Mother left the room, and I sat down in front of the fireplace, just as I used to when I was a child. I looked at the tile, at the design. The parallel lines and dots began to dance before my eyes. Stared at it. It seemed to hold, control my gaze. And then almost at once, I felt an icy chill. And the design vanished. In its place, there was black, infinite space, filled with shadows and still shadows beyond shadows. And I noticed a speck of gray come out of that blackness. There was a strange, sulfurous odor in the air as it came toward me, at first very slowly, and gradually faster and faster. As though it were coming to me through endless years of space. Suddenly there was an ear-shattering thunderclap. A streak of lightning zigzagged through the room in an insane dance. And I heard the front door close. I heard footsteps approaching. I turned around, faced the doorway, and then I saw him.
Don't scream.
Who are you?
You are Kathy. Kathy Bryan.
You know me?
I did. 10 years ago.
Where did you come from?
Tell me. How do I appear to you?
How you appear?
Yes. Please.
You have white hair, white beard, but your eyes, no, it can't be.
What can't be? That my eyes are the eyes of a corpse, that I look more like a dead man than a living one.
Yes.
That should not be so strange.
Who are you? Did you know my father?
Dr. Bryan. Very well. Very well, indeed.
How did he die? I want to know that.
He was murdered.
Murdered?
Yes, murdered.
How do you know?
I saw it all.
You?
I was punished for it.
You murdered him?
No, I didn't kill him. He was the only friend I had in the world. That's why I came back here tonight. Didn't you ever know how your father died?
No.
Would you like to know?
More than anything in the world.
He was the kindest of men. And that's what led to his destruction. He took a man under his care. A man who had been given up as a raving maniac. And rather than see this man placed in an institution, he kept him in the guest cottage of his house.
Wait. Wait, I remember now. The man was a poet.
Yes. His name was Dennis Damore. Your father believed this man was a great poet and struggled to save him.
Did this man murder my father?
No. No. One evening when your father came in to treat Damore, there was a third man in the darkened cottage. This man leaped at your father and drove a knife into his back. The poor madman, frightened, ran over the countryside until he was caught by the police. And he was charged with the murder of your father.
You said you saw all this.
I did.
Then you are...
The madman, Dennis Damore.
You're dead?
Perhaps I am.
The murderer. Who was the person who murdered my father?
You know him quite well. He's the man who's now married to your mother, Mark Weldon.
No. Can you prove this?
Your father is the only one who can prove this.
My father. Can you bring him back here?
Bring him back?
You came back. If you could only bring him and prove this.
Prove it? Perhaps I can. Perhaps I will bring him back tonight.
Just then, there was a tremendous thunderclap, and the electric lights failed. I tried to see him by the firelight, but he wasn't in the room. I ran to the door, stumbling over furniture in the shadows and screaming for him to wait. I opened the front door, but he wasn't there.
Kathy, we heard you screaming.
Did you, Mother?
What happened?
I found out how my father died.
Really? How?
He was murdered.
Laura, did you tell her anything?
No, not a word, Mark, I swear. Kathy, how did you find out?
I told you how I'd find out.
That child.
Yes, it worked.
That's impossible.
Of course you'd say that. But I discovered tonight that you, Mark, murdered my father. That you cleverly arranged that a poor patient of his named Dennis Damore would be arrested for the crime that you committed.
Who told you this?
Dennis Damore.
Damore? Was he here?
Yes. He told me everything.
And you believed him?
Why shouldn't I?
Why, the man's a maniac. I don't know how he ever got here. He should be at the state institution for the criminally insane.
Number, please.
Hello, operator. Will you put through a call to the state institution for the criminally insane at Blyton? I wish to speak to whomever is in charge. And call me back as soon as you get them. It's urgent.
Yes, sir. I understand.
Thank you. Now, Catherine, you claim you actually spoke to this man.
Yes, Mark. He told me he saw you murder my father.
Why, you're lucky you escaped with your life. Well, the man is a homicidal maniac. I find it shocking that you should even begin to believe this fantastic story.
But it seems to be true, Mark, doesn't it? My father was murdered. And Dennis D'Amore was sent away for the crime.
Yes, yes, that part of it is true. But to accuse me... Laura, we've tolerated her in this enough, but this is... Hello?
Hello, this is Dr. King, the night supervisor of State Institution.
Oh, yes. Hello, Dr. King. This is Mark Weldon speaking. Has one of your patients, Dennis D'Amore, escaped?
Dennis D'Amore? The poet?
Yes, that's right. A homicidal maniac.
He hasn't escaped, Mr. Weldon. He was one of the patients who was killed in a fire that broke out in this place 2 years ago.
What's that?
Didn't you hear me?
Yes. Yes, I heard you. Thank you. Goodbye.
Mark, what is it?
Dennis D'Amore is dead. He was killed 2 years ago.
Well, friend, how would you like to have a little Chinese tile that can produce dead men for you? Or don't you think that Dennis D'Amore is a ghost? Perhaps you think he's just an old pop-eyed poltergeist? Well, we'll know in a moment as we hear Catherine Bryan tell us the second half of her weird story.
My stepfather's hand trembled as he hung up the phone. And even in the red glow of the firelight, I could see his face had suddenly turned snowy white.
It's impossible. The dead can't come back. Unless you're making up this whole thing, Kathy.
Why should I invent a story like this?
Because you've always been insanely jealous. You've always hated your mother for marrying me. Isn't that true, Laura? Isn't it?
Yes. It's true.
There. You see, Catherine, your mother loves you. She wouldn't lie. Now tell us the truth. You made up this whole wild tale about Dennis D'Amore, didn't you?
No, Mark. I didn't invent it. Dennis D'Amore was here.
He couldn't have been. He's been dead for 2 years.
Then how would I know the things I told you?
I don't know. And that's what you've got to explain.
Mark, why does this upset you so? If you didn't murder him, what difference does it make about D'Amore? Why are you so frightened?
I'm not frightened. I'm just determined to get to the bottom of this thing. What was that?
Just the thunder, Mark.
Laura, why are you looking at me like that?
Like what?
Staring at me. As though you've seen me for the first time. Do you believe this mad story Catherine's told us? Do you think I murdered her father?
I just remembered certain things, Mark. I can't help it if I think of them now.
What things? Tell me, what things?
2 days before the murder, you told me you were in love with me. I sent you away, told you never to come to this house again.
Go on.
On the night of the murder, I saw you standing in the moonlight near the guest cottage.
You did?
I thought I was mistaken, especially since you claimed you were at home that night. Oh, Mark, don't be angry with me. I can't help it thinking of these things now. It's only natural.
Natural? Is it natural for a man's wife to accuse him of a crime like murder? And on the basis of what? The word of a psychopathic girl who should have been confined long ago. She talked to a man who's been dead for 2 years. I suppose you believe that, too. And who is this man, even assuming that he's alive? A madman. A homicidal maniac who took your first husband's life when your husband tried to cure him. Well, I've had enough of this.
Mark, what are you taking out of that drawer?
Kathy, come here.
Why? Mark, put the gun away.
Shut up, Lola. Now, Kathy, I won't hurt you unless you try something dangerous. I'm holding this gun because I believe your mother and I are no longer safe in the same room with you. Now I want the truth. You were lying to us before, weren't you?
No.
Very well, then. Where is this man you saw? I'd like to see him, too.
I don't know.
Of course you don't, because he doesn't exist.
He does. He appeared when I looked at the Chinese tile.
The Chinese tile? Good. Look at your Chinese tile now. Make him appear.
You're trying to make a fool of me. A liar.
You'll do as I tell you. Look at that tile. Go on.
All right, I will.
Now, what do you see?
Nothing but the design.
Yes, and that's all you're going to see.
No. The design is fading. It's getting dark. Dark. Nothing but blackness. Mark, I heard the front door. Someone just came in.
Yes.
Those footsteps. That's just how he came in the last time.
Perhaps, but I doubt if it's...
Good evening.
Oh! It is, Demore.
You remember me, Laura?
Yes. You've changed a great deal, but it is you.
Mr. Weldon, it's been 10 years since I've seen you.
Demore, then you're not dead. There must have been some mistake when I identified you.
Not dead.
You escaped. Someone must have been identified instead of you. That's the only explanation.
It depends on what you choose to believe, Mr. Weldon. I brought a guest with me.
My father.
Dr. Bryan, I'm sure you know these people quite well. Of course you do.
What's he saying? He's talking to my father.
That's right, Kathy. Unfortunately, you cannot see him. But he is here. Aren't you, Doctor?
Demore, what are you up to?
What do you think?
If you come back here to make trouble...
Trouble? No. I've come back because someone wanted to know the truth. And I've brought the doctor back for the same reason. Doctor, before these others, I want you to tell us who murdered you. Who murdered you?
Mark, you shot him.
Yes.
Why?
He's dangerous. A maniac.
That's not the reason. It's because you murdered my father, and you don't want us to know.
All right, Kathy. I did kill him.
Mark!
It doesn't make any difference now. This maniac has planted suspicion in your minds. You would have found out sooner or later.
Mark!
Yes, I killed him. For you, Laura. I love you. But that's over now. It's been over for a long time. I know what to do now. And it's going to be very simple. Thanks to our friend lying there.
What are you going to do?
Don't you know, Laura? It's so simple. Your bodies must be found in such a condition that they will be certain Damore killed you. And then I'll tell them how I shot the homicidal maniac to protect myself.
It's the same way. He killed my father.
Yes, Kathy.
You won't die, Catherine.
Damore.
Did you think you could kill me, Weldon?
Damore.
Do you think those shots will stop me?
Don't you come near me. Stand back.
Nothing will stop me, Weldon.
The gun. It's empty. No, don't. Let go, please.
Yes, let go. Oh. I saw the bullet strike Demore. They hit him, but they didn't stop him from lurching toward Mark and seizing him by the throat. As they fell to the floor, the kerosene lamp fell off its table. It might have been the wind, but I believe otherwise. I'm almost certain it was my father. In a moment, the drapes were on fire and the whole place was blazing. I screamed to my mother to leave. She ran with me out of the blazing building into the storm that raged outside.
2 weeks later, my mother came into the hotel room where we were staying.
I've just come from the police, Kathy.
Well, Mother?
Only one body is positively identified.
Whose?
Mark's.
The other body?
They haven't been able to find it in the rubble.
I don't believe they ever will.
But, Kathy, the police checked with the authorities at the state institution. It seems that some of the patients did escape at the time they had the fire there 2 years ago. It's possible that Damore was among them.
It's possible, but I doubt it.
You think Damore died 2 years ago?
Yes, Mother. Don't you?
Well, friend, I guess you've met ghosts before, but I'm sure this is the first time you've ever met a crazy spook. Or don't you think Dennis DeMort was a ghost? Well, there's only one way to find out if ghosts really exist. Just ask one to haunt you sometime. You'll be sure to listen, won't you? Until next week, then. Good night. Pleasant.
Sanctum has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
How you feeling? Feel all right?
CITR presents DJing 101.9. We offer people a way to learn about the fun of mixing, sharing music, and throwing events. Our workshops and studio access is free for students and members. No experience or turntables are necessary. Workshops from 4 to 8 p.m. are on Tuesdays in 212A in the Student Union Building at UBC. For more information, visit us at citr.ca or follow at CITRDJ on Twitter.
And you're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. Happy Valentine's Day. Yes, it is Valentine's Day, and we're here to scare you on Valentine's Day. We are. Because we like to scare people. No, we don't. We don't like to scare people, but we do like to play very interesting stories. And seeing as how Valentine's Day is a time when a lot of people propose, here's a quick reminder of what proposals can entail using a ring just before our next broadcast of our next episode of Inner Sanctum coming up right now.
Three rings for the elven kings under the sky, seven for the dwarf lords in their halls of stone, nine for mortal men doomed to die, one for the Dark Lord on his dark throne in the land of Mordor, where the shadows lie. One ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them in the land of Mordor, where the shadows lie.
Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm. friends of the creaking door. Once this is your host midnight, to welcome you once again in the real assignment. Weak and come on in, and never mind looking back over your shoulder. Whatever it is that's behind you can't be half as bad as what's in front. There came a tapping. As the man whose throat had just been made the scene of an experiment with a razor while he slept said, my chamber door. I'm going from bed to hers.
Distinctly, I remember it was in the late December.
All right. Settle down now. It's coming. Ghost upon and the floor. There's nothing you can do about it.
Eagerly, I wish.
Just keep a good hold on yourself. Vainly, and your wife, if your life is borrow from paid my off. Books,
surcease of sorrow.
Joe sorrow Harris. 21, wearing a cheap blue serge suit
for the rare
and a thin top
coat,
cold and wet on a cold and rainy night, decides to make a change.
Kansas City's okay, but there's nothing there for me. I gotta get out. My wardrobe ain't built for a hard winter, so I figure it could be more comfortable on the coast, California. But I ain't paying for rail transportation this year, so I head for the KC freight yards. And I pick me out a nice long freight job that happens to have an empty car.
This it is.
And pull the sliding door over. Leave it. Just a crack for air and finger hole for when we reach the land of oranges. The old boiler up front's got the steam up.
The fact is I was not.
And we're off.
And so faintly you came tapping at my chamber door.
I relax. All I gotta do is let a couple of days slide by and sunshine. Hey, what? I didn't notice nobody else was in the car.
Didn't you now, Pally?
No.
That's too bad.
He leaned back into the darkness of his corner so I couldn't see him very good. He was a young guy, maybe my age, maybe a couple of years older. My size, too. Same color hair and eyes. Almost close enough to be brothers, but there was something in his eyes that had never been in mine. I was scared.
You know something funny? You look like me.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that myself in a...
Why?
Well, lots of guys look a little like each other.
No.
I mean... Huh?
Nobody looks like me.
Well, okay, so I don't.
You're trying to. That means you must be one of...
One of what?
They have ways of changing their appearance. You're one of them. You can't fool me.
Look, I don't know what you're talking about.
It's no use. You can't fool me. I'll have to punish you.
Hey, watch out with that knife.
I'm going to cut the resemblance away and find out what you really look like.
You're crazy. Stop it.
Let go of my hand. I've got to cut you away.
No. I got your arm twisted. And the knife is pointing at your heart. Now drop it.
No, nobody's as strong as me. I'll...
Stop it. I warn you. Stop it.
No.
Then I got to do this.
No.
I told you. Dead. Hey. No, he's dead. I gotta get out. The door. Slide it open. The odd bones.
Another one of these sliding doors. Why don't they snap a proper? Give me a hand, Charlie.
Okay. You locked it. Now I can't get out. I can't get out. So there I was, locked in with him, in the dark. He was dead, so I wasn't afraid of him. At first. I even gave him a going over. His eyes were open, but I flopped him over, and I went through his pockets. Just a couple of bucks and some small change, and his draft card. Funny, he was 4F, just like me. His name was Martin Pell. That's a laugh, too, finding out who a guy is after you kill him. Kill him? Yeah, I was a murderer. I just realized it. They'll hang me for that. No, it was self-defense, but what chance have I got of proving that? Me with a record, too. But maybe I can lose that record. Maybe. Yeah. So I switched draft cards with him. And now he's Joe Harris. And I'm Martin Pell. Martin Pell of, that says on his card, of Wisey, Oklahoma. And the hours go by, and I'm there with him locked in a boxcar, and the wheels keep pounding underneath, and he's dead. I gotta get out. There's gotta be a way. The door! Shut! I gotta think. Think. Hey, wait. We're stopping. Now what? We're stopping. Yeah, he's covered up. Maybe they won't spot him. Anyways, I gotta get out. I'll yell and I'll pound on the door. Yeah, that's the way. Help! Help! Let me out!
Catching a ride bump. Get out of here.
Yeah, sure.
Don't you know it's against the law riding a freight?
Yeah, I know.
Or maybe this will help you remember.
No.
Now get out of here. Get fast.
Fast as I could, I got away from there. The yard bull took a quick look into the car, but he didn't spot the body under the sacking. And the train started up. And it began moving away. With Martin Pell lying under a pile of dirty sacking, with a knife in his heart and a funny look in his eyes. Only, I'm Martin Pell now. It was only a watering stop where the train stopped, so I walked across the prairie. Not knowing where I was going and not caring much. Well, I keep walking across the dark face of the land until I spot a light. A couple of lights. A small town, it looked like. A small town, somewheres. Where? Right on the edge of town, there's a lunch wagon, and it's open. And there's a light shining in it, and I'm hungry. So I go into the lunch wagon. Hi. How about something to eat, huh?
Sure thing, Martin. Sure thing.
What? What did you say?
I said, sure, you can have something to eat, Martin. What'd it be?
Martin? What? What town is this?
Why, you ought to know, Martin. This is Wisey. Wisey, Oklahoma.
Wisey? But that's the same place. It can't be.
Oh, that's no way to talk about your own hometown. Of course, you've been away quite a few years. You look good now.
Wouldn't you say I've changed?
Oh, no more than's natural. Of course, you're only around 16 when you left. Kind of an advanced 16, though.
Yeah?
Ain't many kids of that age would have stuck up the bank, knocked off the night watchman.
I killed him?
Oh, don't get modest, fella. Sure. Old man Henshaw. Hey, I was near forgetting. You said you're hungry.
Not anymore.
Oh, come on, have something to eat. Don't you believe in putting anything in your stomach before doing a job?
Doing a job? Me?
Why do you think I sent for him? Why should I promise you a grand?
I don't remember.
Oh, for Pete's sake, Martin. How many men you killed that you don't remember a job like this?
Never mind the act. Play it straight, huh?
Okay. Don't get nasty. It's too late to talk business anyway. Come on, I got a room fixed up for you and back. Get a good night's sleep. We'll talk in the morning. About an old man that's lived way past his time. And about how you're gonna take care of that. Martin, I sent for you because I need money.
I ain't got any.
My uncle has. Old man Carew.
I'll get it from him.
When he dies, I will.
So?
So I want him to die.
Oh.
I got a grand in cash. That's yours.
For what?
For my uncle dying a little earlier than expecting.
No dice.
No dice? Martin, you take care of old man Carew, or so help me, I'll turn you in on that bank job.
Go ahead. Turn me in. I can prove that I... And then I shut up quick. Blitz was watching me with those little pig eyes in his fat face. Sure, I could prove I wasn't Martin Pell, that I'd never been in Wisey, Oklahoma before in my life. Sure. But to do that, I'd have to admit I was Joe Harris. And when they found that corpse in the boxcar with my draft card on him, that'd be fine. A lot of attention the jury had paid to my plea of self-defense. No witnesses and me on the lam and me switching draft cards in panic. Sure, even the hangman had burst out laughing when he slipped the noose around my neck. I shut up quick, Bliss watching me close. And then I said, okay, Bliss, it's a deal. What's the layout?
I'll pull in here. Trees will cover the car in case anybody happens to be out late on the highway. Can't be too careful. Ain't that so, Martin?
That's so.
It's only a short walk. Let's get going. Here. You better take this.
What? Oh. A tire iron.
I picked it up in a junkyard. They'll never trace it to me.
It's for
old man Carew. They bother you?
I ain't used to them.
Anymore, huh? The house. Old man Carew never believed in buying curtains for the windows. There he is, rocking in his chair. Now watch the porch step. It's busted. I guess we knock. It's polite.
What's it now?
Uncle Carew. It's me.
What you want?
Just to come in. I brought a visitor. An old friend of yours.
Sit where you like. Sit in my rocker. Ain't nobody sits in it but me. Who's the man with you?
Don't you recognize him?
Looks like Pell boy.
That's who it is. Martin Pell.
Never was any good. Like you, Bliss. All right, you visited. Gone home now.
Kind of cold out. Give us a chance to warm up, huh?
I don't care what you do.
Just dosing off a bit. Go on, Martin.
What?
You ain't looking this way. Now's the time.
I ain't gonna. He's an old man.
Give me the iron.
What do you...
Give it to me.
All right, here.
Yeah. Uncle. Uncle. Yeah. That'll be that, huh? Pockets. Yeah. Uncle was carrying quite a bit of dough on him. Martin. Here.
Huh?
Here, take the money. It's your payment.
No.
I'll put it in your pocket myself. That's very important. When they find you here, knocked out, tripping over that busted porch step, They'll know why you killed old man Carew.
What are you talking about?
Sure, and knowing you're Regan Martin, they'll never look for anybody else. Now, when they find you on the premises with the old man's dough in your pocket and your fingerprints on the tire iron...
No!
After I...
I was walking up a long flight of stairs with nothing at the top but more stairs and more stairs, and my head was hurting. And then I woke up. Woke up lying outside of old man Carew's house with a blood-stained tire iron in my hand. I let go of it. I pulled myself to my feet. And then I heard cars. They were coming. And there I still was. I had to get away fast. I didn't know the country, but I was hunted. And a hunted animal's got an instinct to hide, to run, and to hide from the killers. They didn't find me that day because I fooled them. I didn't try getting out of the county, getting away from the town. Oh, no. That's where they were watching for me. So I stayed put close to town, which fooled them. And also, I had a job to do.
Who is it?
Martin. Me.
What are you doing here?
I got paid for a killing I didn't do. So I figured maybe I better do a killing now for no pay at all.
Stay where you are.
No, we're alone here. I got this knife.
No.
Bliss, you got a pencil?
Pencil? Yeah, sure.
Then sit down and write a little note about how you killed old man Carew.
No.
I got the knife against your heart. Sit down and write.
All right. Well,
just write. I killed my uncle because I wanted his money. You got it?
Good. Got it.
Now sign your name pretty.
I signed it. Take that knife away.
Sure. After I... Yeah. Goodbye, Mr. Bliss. Now, I'd better put the knife in your hand like this. Too bad your nerves went back on you. You committed suicide, Mr. Bliss. That's what you did. And now they'll stop looking for me. I holed in and waited until they found Bliss. So the law was called off. There was nobody to look for. So I headed for the watering stop and the freights because it was cold. And I was heading for sunshine. There was a train getting ready to head for the coast, so I sneaked close to it. On the far side, there was a couple of bulls around chewing the rag, but they didn't see me. I spotted an open boxcar and I climbed in. I got away from the door. The bulls were coming along checking. One of them sounded like the guy that had thrown me off the night before. This time I didn't care. I was hoping he'd lock the door on me. So I curled up in a corner and waited.
Yeah, Mac, that was quite a wreck they had up ahead. Quite a wreck. Held up the line for 24 hours. This freight here had already pulled out when word came in of the wreck up ahead, so they backed her right back here and let her stand. But she's on her way now. One of them sliding doors is open. Come here, will you?
Hey, wait. If this is the same train... It can't be. This car. If it's the same train, this second would be over there. Let me see. The second. Yeah, it's the second. And under it, I gotta see. Yeah, it's him. Martin Pell. And I'm locked in with him. Me and Martin. The killers. We're going to the sunshine together. And that's how the cops will find us. Together. Him dead. And me. And me.
Well, well. Alas for poor Joe, who couldn't keep out of boxcars. He was a nice boy, but he couldn't stay put. I guess they'll give him the order of the Rolling Stone. Tombstone. And to leave you with a happy parting thought, whenever you hear a freight train whistling in the night, think of Joe and wonder, is he still in it with Martin rattling?
Well, friends, it's time once again to close that creaking door. Until next week at the same time, when we'll be back with a little hunk of horror. You'll be sure to listen, won't you? Until next week, then. Good night. Pleasant dreams.
Inner Sanctum has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Valentine's Miss from Boris Karloff.
Are you one of the frightened? Have you had your fortune told recently? Did the gypsy read cards or look into a crystal ball to tell you what the future held in store for you? The three Gamboli sisters wanted to know, and their fortune teller told them one sunny day in Italy. Now the Gamboli sisters were triplets. They were as like as three peas in a pod. And their names were Rita, Jasa, and Lena. And since their parents' death, they had supported themselves as seamstresses. Their 19th birthday was the day of the big festival at the town square, and the sisters went into the tent of the fortune teller and demanded of the old crone there to know their fortunes and how soon they would marry. The old crone gazed into the crystal and shook her craggy, ancient head. "You will never marry, my dear," she cackled, "because you'll all be dead before the year is out." The girls laughed, but deep in their hearts there came a dim sense of fear. The bony fingers singled out Rita and told her that she would die of pneumonia. Jasa and Lena trembled when the old woman whispered something far more terrible about them. Jasa would die at Lena's hands, and Lena in turn would die because of killing her sister. Now they were sure the old woman was crazy, and shouting insults at her, they bounced out of the tent to seek their admirers and the warmth and gaiety of the festival. But the old gypsy's words stayed with them. And within a month, Rita died on the night of a full moon of pneumonia. Jasa and Lena were heartbroken and chilled with the prophecy that seemed to be coming true. All the village mourned, and the girls in their bereavement sought to find some comfort in love. But such is fortune. They both fell in love with the same man, a tall, dashing man of the village, Antonio. Lena and Jessa had always loved each other as sisters, but now they were women both vying for the same man. One night, 3 months to the day of Rita's death, they went at each other like tigresses in their little hut on the north end of the village. In a craze of passion, Lena plunged her seamstress's shears deep into Jessa's heart. Lena, overcome first with remorse and then fear, dragged her sister's body out to the well, and with the strength of the guilty one who hides a crime, dropped Jessa's body down into the dark, slimy interior. She fled back into the house and fell to her knees before the statue of the Madonna on the kitchen wall and prayed for forgiveness. In her mad desire for Antonio, she'd forgotten the gypsy woman's dire prophecy, and now she had Antonio. And she told the people of the village that Jessa had run away because Antonio preferred her, her sister. But on the day of the wedding, Lena, resplendent in her lace bridal gown, went to the well and stared down into the place where her sister's body was hidden from the eyes of the world. In the few inches of dirty, scummy water at the well's bottom, she saw the huddled outline of Jessa's decayed body there. Quite unexpectedly, a bat flew up out of the well and settled in Lena's black, luxuriant hair. Screaming and twisting, she tried to beat it off, but the bat flapped its wings maddeningly and hung on. Lena whirled and tripped over the rim of the well, screaming like a banshee, her fingernails raking the walls as she fell. When the townspeople lowered a ladder into the well, they found the bodies. And even Antonio could see that the point of the seamstress shears sticking out through Jessa's back had knifed right into Lena's falling body. So the prophecy was fulfilled. Rita died of pneumonia. Lena killed Jessa, and Jessa killed Lena. A triple slay, you might call it, but where was I? Oh, yes, your fortune, my dear. Now, let's see. Ah, yes, I think you're going to kill somebody.
Are you not sure where to go on campus? Traveling late at night and afraid to go alone? Call SafeWalk, a free service where a co-ed team will take you anywhere you need to go on campus. Don't walk alone. For a walk, add SafeWalk to your phone. Call 604-822-5355. That's 604-822-5355. Alternatively, use a UBC Blue phone and ask for SafeWalk. Approach any SafeWalk team or drop by our office on the main floor of the sub across from the gallery lounge.
Because you're mine, I walk the line.
And you're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. We are coming up on the last few seconds before 2 o'clock. And that will be just about all for us here at Scald's Hall. I am your host, Brian McDonald, here in beautiful Vancouver. Coming up next, we have Radio Zero with Tyler and Cam. And remember, on this pleasant and sunny day, to have a very safe and very happy Halloween. And Halloween. Have a very safe and happy Halloween on Valentine's Day, yes. Because I've been scaring you for some reason. It's because it's very hard to find love stories from the golden age of radio. It's very interesting. They didn't make very many. Lots of horror stories, lots of adventure stories, lots of science fiction and fantasy stories, but not a lot of love stories. Go figure. Anyway, that will be all for us here at Scald's Hall. Radio Zero is coming up next. Enjoy your Friday afternoon.